again, everyone. I'm Brian DeNovellis, and welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. March Madness came in like a lion, and boy, did it go out like a lamb. All of our Tri-State teams have been ousted. They have been eliminated before the second weekend. I thought Yale was going to get there, and they ran into a bigger, stronger, more athletic Texas A&M team. They just met their match. I thought St. John's was going to get there, and boy, what a disappointing ending to their season. Look, a lot to be proud of, Johnny's fans. So much, including hanging a couple of banners. You know, first time things have happened there in 25 years. When you do things like that, you have to be celebrated. But boy, oh boy, the loss just stings. Rick Pitino losing to really his protege, John Calipari and Arkansas. They were the better team, and they deserve to win that game. We'll get into that. And UConn, UConn, their dominating streak of 13 straight NCAA tournament wins has come to an end. Florida came through when the best player on the court, Walter Clayton Jr., needed to be at his best. We'll get to all of that. And I want to talk a little Iona basketball because they welcomed a new head coach, Dan Gerio, while Tobin Anderson, their former coach, is in search of a new job and is a coaching candidate at a couple of places where I will tell you a little bit later in the podcast. We'll get to all of that, plus a special guest. Meg Barber is a two-time national champion at NYU. The women's basketball program has done it again, a second straight perfect 31-0 season. The Violets are on top of the Division III basketball world once again, and Meg Barber will join us on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast to talk about what was one of the most dominant seasons in women's basketball history. Can't wait to talk to Meg. But first, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean counties, give Mike a call. Spring has sprung. Summer's right around the corner. You want to get your Jersey Shore home? Call Mike, 201-988-2577. He makes dreams come true. And tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, I am now joined by the head coach of the NYU women's basketball team, Meg Barber, who just wrapped up a second consecutive undefeated season and capped it off with a second straight D3 national championship. Meg, welcome back. Congratulations.
Thank you. Feels even better to be back this time after winning.
Yeah, I bet it does. You know, last time we talked, I had you and Dave Klatsky on, and unfortunately, the men fell short. My heart bleeds for them. You guys pulled it off. I said to you at that time, I said, Coach, love to have you back on if you win it all, and you honored it. So thank you.
Here we are. Yeah.
So, hey, for the record, all right, you defeated Smith College. It was a rematch of last year's championship. First time that's ever happened in D3. You know, they're looking for revenge. You're looking to solidify yourselves as one of the, you know, great dynasty teams in program history, if not D3 history. And you wallop them, Coach, 77-49. I'm sure you didn't expect that, but all I can say is, wow.
It felt like wow, you know, heading into the game, you know, the final four game we really had in the national semifinal, UW Stout was our opponent. They play a five out offense, very dynamic, had a lot of scoring, just a lot to have to defend. So it took so much prep for our staff and to get our players ready. We just literally did not, you know, look for it at all in terms of who that next opponent would be. And then when I started digging into game film on Smith right after we advanced, noticed pretty quickly that we had really, really great matchups, you know, just really great individual matchups on the defensive side of the ball. Thought we had some advantages we could take care of on the offensive side of the ball. But then to perform on that stage the way that we did was, the year before we were very tight. We were very tight, and this year we just came out loose, ready, and we were probably one of the best games of the whole season on the biggest stage, which is just incredible.
Yeah, talk about, having it all come together at the right time. You really jumped out to a big lead in this game. I want to say it was the first 11 points in the game or something.
Yeah, it was 11-0. We were up also 20-5. They burned a couple timeouts. I mean, pregame, I like to give a good pregame talk. It
It's all
usually
about the
comes to me.
pregame talk, coach. Sorry.
Yeah, comes to me, and I decided to kind of try to get the girls like singing a little bit in the locker room and just loosen them up a little, knowing how we had come out the year before. It honestly, I never watched the national championship from 2024 until we were facing a rematch with the same team, and I was like, man, I'm gonna actually have to rewatch this game to see why was it as ugly as I remembered in my brain. So this year, we were just loose and we played like that, and we had obviously having been there the year before, I think really helped. But I can tell you that literally the next day on the bus ride home, I rewatched a game because I knew it was a thing of beauty. And as a fan of this team, as much as being the coach, I really couldn't wait to just see what it actually looked like because I knew what it felt like. And it was a really, really dominant final statement in a sense for the senior class that now leaves with this insane legacy of, back-to-back national championships.
So nice to hear that. So many things going through my mind, but I'm going to rewind a second here. You had them singing in the locker room. What was it? I can feel it coming in the air tonight from Collins. What were they singing?
New York City has a lot of anthems, so we had some Alicia Keys going, we had our hands
Okay.
going, we had just a collective energy, and I am not a great singer, so I kick it off with a couple words, and we have a great group that kind of takes over. So it was a fun atmosphere before the game started, and I really think that helped contribute to just the way we came out.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. So this senior class, I mean, they leave with a legacy. Just obviously having the two-time National Player of the Year and Natalie Bruns, just the tip of the iceberg, Meg. What does this senior class mean, first of all, as a whole, and how much are you going to miss them?
They're irreplaceable. Natalie Bruns has won every award to speak of, and then interestingly enough, in the national championship game, Belle Pelecchia was named Final Four MVP. So if that gives you any insight into people who actually watch Belle Pelecchia play a basketball game as opposed to just looking at stats or kind of looking at highlight reels, Belle's impact is felt in every category, in every minute, in every second of what we're doing. So we just have had these two on-court, unicorns. And then Mary-Kate Fahey, Chloe Teeter were behind the scenes in a sense. Mary-Kate had a really important role, shooter off the bench. Chloe Teeter has been one of the leads of our scout team. And, both of them could have been in any other program and would be starters and probably all conference players in those programs, but they chose this for the entirety of the team. And their leadership has been a huge component of, why our team culture is as successful and as hardworking as it is. So, regardless of stats, the entire class has really left their mark, and they are going to be really, really hard to replace for us.
And not to be missed, but Jamie Behar as well, one of the starters
Well,
off the
Jamie,
floor.
yeah, I mean, credit NYU for having great grad programs because Jamie coming from Lehigh, she already had her master's, and then she had an interest in sport business, which we're really fortunate to have a tremendous program in the sport business master's field. And when she got here, just her personality fit right in with our team, and that's always the most important thing for our staff is making sure that we have, a sense of cohesion with who we're recruiting and the type of people we're recruiting. And in the final, her passing was insane. I mean, she led us to like eight uncontested layups, literally. So, people talk about her shooting, but actually her passing and her basketball IQ were, a huge component of what we did this year. So she will really be missed for us as well.
Coach, the way this team dominated, I don't know how to compare it to anything. I forget all the championships that Gino Auriemma won, but some of these great South Carolina teams and, UConn teams that went undefeated and just, you didn't have a close game all year, Coach. You're bludgeoning teams, even in the NCAA tournament. You said Wisconsin Stout, 19 points. That was your closest game all season, 19 points. You won by an average of 28 and a half points in the NCAA tournament, 37 points all season. When you hear these stats, how does it make you feel about this team and their legacy and where they stand?
Well, it's shocking to hear the numbers. I mean, I see the numbers, so I'm aware of them, but this reflection piece, which obviously has started, it's like a wow moment. Going through it, we just kept looking at, and I think every coach does this. You're like, what could take us out? What if a team did this? What if a team, because you're watching your team every day. And even in practice, I would put them in situations, you're down 10, there's 3 minutes to go, or the team is playing a packed in 3-2 zone and they're just letting you shoot threes all night. Like, how are you going to counter that? And so we worked on that stuff all year, and our staff was actually joking today, like, man, you had so many great situations that we never, I mean, I thought we had this incredible lob play, and I was like, man, we have Jamie Behar, one of the best passers we've ever had. Nally Brun's one of the best lob players that you possibly could ever find as a target. And we never had to run it, but what a great, I want to say, don't want to say problem, but what a great, thing to have come up that we never used our situations because our players never overlooked an opponent. They never overlooked a possession. When a team went on a run against us, which, again, we were up, I think, 19 at halftime against Smith, and they cut it to 16, call it. And, Bell Plekia got the team together in a huddle, like basically like snap out of it. Just so even those moments where, a 3-point run could turn into a 6 or an 8. We just had incredible leadership on the court to take over those moments and make sure that, the next possession was the most important possession for us. And, Bell was asked in the press conference right after the game, like, what is it about this team? And she said, I just think we have a group of winners. And I do think that that's, ultimately when you look at this group, how they'll be remembered in a way is they really are just a winning group in terms of culture, in terms of work ethic, in terms of selflessness, and all the things that go into having a winning product.
I didn't look up all the stats. I tried to. Did you ever trail at halftime at any point this season?
We were never down at half. We were down, I think, collectively about like 8 or 9 minutes total all season, which is insane. I
All
mean,
season.
all
All season.
season. Heading into the Final Four, I think we were, or heading into the at least Sweet 16 all season, we were down 6.5 minutes all season.
And that does that include like 2-0, 4-2?
Yeah, and that's what it
Are
usually
you
was. It was
serious?
like we missed and maybe they scored a bucket, so we were down to like 2 or 3 different teams all season. And then we played in the Sweet 16. We were actually down like 3 or 4 times in the first half by like a point, and we would come back and score. So that added a couple like total minutes to that stat, but it's less than 10 all year, less than 10 minutes that we were behind, which is
That's insane.
insane. It's insane.
Oh my, that has to be some kind of an unofficial record. I mean, normally some teams, might trail a couple of minutes, 6 minutes in a game all season. Coach, that's mind-boggling. I'm guessing you've never been a part of something like this.
No, I'd like to think I've been on the other side of it. I was, an assistant at Temple when UConn was in the American for a couple years there when they, before they kind of figured everything out. And, just to be on the sidelines and watch their dominance, I mean, you felt great if it was single digits heading into the locker room at half. You felt great if you came out and even scored the first bucket of the third quarter. So some of those similarities, I remember being on the other side of it. And I think it kind of helped in this position of what to even talk to the team about at halftime, and to just constantly remind them, like, we were everyone's Super Bowl, we were everyone's target. So how we had to play this year against everyone was actually probably a lot harder than what we even had to do last year. So in that way, we kind of battle tested ourselves because we really did get everyone's best shot.
It's just amazing. When I think about what you've accomplished these past 2 years, 62 straight wins, 31-0 back-to-back seasons. I believe it is the eighth longest winning streak in NCAA women's basketball history on any level. So again, you're going to enter with the bullseye on your back next year, coach. What is that going to be like?
Oh man, I mean, so much happened between last, the 2024 end and the start. I coached the U17 USA basketball team, or I came back from that. Our team went to China for a trip, which was incredible. And then, your freshmen arrive, right around like a week before Labor Day weekend. So right now, I'm honestly looking forward to our staff just kind of resting and rejuvenating. And we're hearing from a lot of recruits that are looking for either a new place or a first place. So we're gonna have to, kind of dig into that. But mostly, we're gonna find a lot of time to celebrate this group because there will never be, I mean, who Bell and Bruns have been on the court. You could put up with some of the best duos, in my opinion. Forget any type of division, just they are one of the best duos to go down in history in the women's basketball game. So we want to give, them their flowers, the senior class their flowers, and make sure we really enjoy this year. Because I think last year kind of felt like, we had to do it. And this year, really, once we graduated the players that we did, we lost three starters off that team. People did not, pencil us in right away as the 2025 national champions. We really did work for this. I think people think, looking at our scores, that, oh, that was easy, that just happened. But these players worked really, really hard. Bell had played the wing position. She shifted to a point guard this year for us. I mean, talk about a role change in such a dramatic manner to then lead a team to an undefeated national championship season. It's almost unheard of. So I'm kind of looking forward to that time with them because we're just really going to miss that senior class that much.
So could there be a parade, some type of celebration?
I was hoping if the
Washington.
men won, I was hoping if the men won, New York City might think it was worthy, right? Because I mean that also what a cool experience to be achieving these high levels of success right alongside our men's program, and we're such huge fans and great friends of theirs. So we just, we wanted it for Dave, we wanted it for their staff, and they had such an incredible season. So we were kind of like, maybe if the men do this, they'll find a reason. But NYU has such a great support system that from the success of these programs, we've just had so many people coming out of the woodwork supporting our teams. So we're looking forward to doing something on campus to celebrate with our friends and family, to actually bring the trophy in and let everybody share a piece of that.
Okay. Well, listen, if you want to, schedule something at Washington Square Park or something, let's do it up, coach. This is this really deserves, something special.
If anybody wants to put a word into New York City to get a little parade, we're all in.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, that would be fun. That would be fun. Jimmy Fallon, I mean, heck, coach,
Right?
if they could have St. John's and Rick Pitino on,
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Listen, it is, it's wonderful. I want you to enjoy it, but also in this day and age, I've talked to so many coaches at the Division I level who, they can't even rest because of the portal. And I know the portal is different at different levels, right? There's different levels to it, but they say there's no rest. You're recruiting while you're getting ready for your next opponent during the next game. Is there any truth to that? Is there any, I guess, residue at this level where you're affected by that and you can't really bask in this glory too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit different. We're affected by choice, not by circumstance. So, you know, I have a lot of colleagues at the Division I level who are trying to recruit their current team to stay. I think the thing that really sets us apart is, you know, we have student athletes that came to NYU because of academics first. Everybody kind of says that all the time, but you know, they are paying for this. This is a family decision. This isn't a basketball decision. Basketball is a huge part of that. And, you know, a lot of players that might be looking at like the Ivy, and maybe it's not the programs that are at the top of the Ivy, and they want to come someplace and win, right? So the trade-off is you're paying for that either way. You're getting financial aid, but there's a sticker price, you know, to this. So we're not re-recruiting our players to stay. You know, we have a very healthy retention rate on a roster. But the Jamie Behars of the world, right, that come into the portal, who are coming from the Patriot League, the Ivy League, A10 schools, looking for that one last stop. Over the last 2 years, we've been really, really successful. We actually, you know, got a player who was at Smith. She was a National Player of the Year, and she was looking for engineering graduate school, which we have a tremendous program in that. That's how we kind of formulated that first roster to finish off winning our second ever national championship in 2024. Also with a transfer from Babson, who ended up being an honorable mention All-America, Megan Bauman. So, you know, it's been a good piece for us, but it's not like our foundational, you know, mode of success, which for some Division I programs it is. Like the portal is your lifeblood. And for us, it's like, this is going to be a really great addition to our puzzle piece, but the core of our puzzle piece is, you know, already here.
Gotcha. So, last question. Who did you get any cool texts from, some famous people or coaches or anything?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of coaches reach out. Louisville was here working out in our facility. So their whole staff, Jeff Walls, Amanda Butler, they reached out to, you know, they had looked at our national championship banner. And, you
Oh.
know, Jeff texted me about 5 hours before Louisville women were tipping off yesterday. So I thought that was just, it's just really neat, in terms of colleagues in the midst of all the craziness that they're also going through to take a second to reach out. Spike Lee, you know, commented on some of the stuff that
Yes.
we've been doing. So, you know, it's New York. So we have a lot of people that have had their eye on us, and that's been really, really fun. We got shout outs, on social media from the Liberty and the Mets and those teams. So it's fun. It's great energy in the city. It's been such an incredible hoop season in New York, you know, and so to be a part of that storyline has been really special for us.
Well, special season. You will remember this forever. They will remember it forever. And I'll remember our conversations like this, Coach. Cannot
Yeah.
thank you enough for coming on once again,
Yeah.
and hope to see you again next season, and more success. So enjoy this and congratulations once again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. So great to talk to Meg. She is unbelievable. I love talking to her. And I'm going to be honest with you. She was more open and more charismatic and colorful this time around than she was the first time. She was great the first time, but while you're in season, right? Coaches are very guarded. They watch what they say. Man, how refreshing was it to hear her say things? And are you kidding me? This team, it has to be one of the most dominant, if not the most dominant seasons ever in women's college basketball. My goodness, they trailed 6.5 minutes, only 6.5 minutes all season. Mind you, every game's 40 minutes times 31 games. What's that? 1,240 minutes? Is that right? 1,240 minutes of college basketball. And they trailed for 6.5 minutes. Insane. And when you win and you're on top and you're at a program and a school as well known around the world as NYU, if you have money and you have the means and you have the talent, you have to take a long, hard look at NYU. And like she said, listen, they're recruiting the same players as the Ivy League and the Patriot League and programs like that. And you have to decide, you know, do you want to go there and be do you want to be a small fish in a big pond in the Ivy League, or do you want to be a big fish in a small pond at NYU and have a chance to play for an NCAA championship and a player like Natalie Bruns, two-time National Player of the Year at the Division III level? Jamie Behar has her education and her master's at Lehigh and then goes to NYU for her graduate year. Hey, you can do a lot worse. And that program is on top of the world. So my thanks to Meg. That was a lot of fun. All right, let's go around the tri-state now. And unfortunately, it is a funeral for St. John's, UConn, all of our teams from the tri-state. All of their seasons are over. It is portal season. It is recruiting season. It is retain who you have, try to keep who you have on your program and get out there and start for next year, because there is no downtime in Division I athletics. There is no, hey, I'm going to go on a vacation. Boy, do I need a vacation. No. Your vacation may come at in a small window in the middle of August, if you're lucky, okay? Because there is no rest. So let's start with St. John's. Disappointing. That's the first word that comes to mind. However, it is a huge success. A successful season on so many levels, an historic season on so many levels, but it ends with a disappointment. How many great things did this team accomplish this year? Big East regular season championship, Big East tournament championship. They hadn't done that in 25 years. The Johnnies had their first NCAA tournament win in 25 years. They also had 30 wins for only the third time in their long and storied history. 30 wins. Now listen, back when they were, you know, in the 50s, when they were winning NIT championships, they didn't play as many games as they do today. So those teams might have won 30 games too. But this is just the third 30-win season. They had 31 wins this year. They had 31 wins in 85 and 86, back-to-back teams. Wow. That says everything. Rick Pitino, Coach of the Year, right? RJ Lewis, Big East Player of the Year, Zubi Ejiofor, first team with RJ Lewis. I mean, so many great team and individual accomplishments. But this is the way I feel about this. Okay. I didn't go to St. John's. I get it, but I root for them and I'm pulling for them. I know a lot about St. John's history. I grew up with the Big East. I was 10 years old, 9 years old when the Big East started. So I am Big East through and through. All right. Love the history of this conference. Love the history of St. John's. But this season reminded me of the 93 Seton Hall team, a team that also won the Big East and regular season title and the Big East championship in convincing fashion. They rolled into the NCAA tournament also as a number two seed. They also won their first round game, only to lose to a higher seeded team, Western Kentucky. I believe they were a seven seed when Seton Hall was the two seed. So, you know, and Seton Hall was loaded. I mean, they had Final Four aspirations. They were built for the Final Four. There were people picking them to win it all, just like this St. John's team. I don't think a lot of people picked St. John's to win it all, but there were a few. And there were a decent amount that picked St. John's to go to the Final Four. That's what happens when you have a Hall of Fame coach in Rick Pitino. That's what happens when you have the Big East Player of the Year. That's what happens when you dominate the Big East. That's what happens when you play defense like this team does. But when you lose a game, listen, If you get to the Final Four, or you get to the Elite Eight, and you lose to a one seed or a two seed, you can live with it. It hurts, but you can live with it. When you get upset by a team that you're supposed to beat, that hurts more. So this season for me will always be heralded and championed for one of the greatest seasons in St. John's history, but they fell short of expectations in the NCAA tournament. To me, when you're a two seed and you don't get to the Sweet 16, you don't get to that second weekend and really like, oh my God, we are 2 wins away from really doing something special here. When the banner says NCAA tournament, second round, it's something to be applauded. But when it says Sweet 16, when it says Elite Eight, that's different. That's on another level. Of course, Final Four and so forth, national championship, yes. But when it says Sweet 16, that's another level. And they didn't get there. Why? Well, Arkansas was healthy. All right. And Boogie Flann makes a difference. And it's one of the most talented teams in the country. Mind you, they were a 10 seed. But, you know, when you're a 10 seed, obviously, from a major conference, you know, you have some big wins and you have some poor, bad losses. I said it all year long. And a lot of people said the same thing and tweeted the same thing and wrote the same thing. When I went to St. John's games this year, we always said, man, if this team shoots like this, like they did against UConn at the Garden, if they shoot like this, they could be a Final Four team. But man, what's going to happen? What's going to happen when they have a poor shooting night? Are they going to be able to defend? Are they going to be able to get stops? Are they going to be able to somehow, when they're not shooting well, make the key plays down the stretch, make a key bucket, get a foul, make a free throw? Are they going to be able to overcome these deficiencies, this major deficiency of a poor shooting team, poor three-point shooting team, a poor free throw shooting team? What's going to happen? We found out what would happen. They were not able to overcome it. It was their worst. Not one of their worst. It was their worst shooting percentage of the season. 28%. Horrendous. All right. And I know that RJ Lewis gets the focus of this and gets the brunt of this. And I saw somewhere on Twitter that he took down his Twitter page because, you know, people were hating on him. People were just destroying him. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I mean, grow up. It's a game. It's a game. You think he meant to do that? You think he meant to shoot 3 for 17? Of course not. And then he was benched. We're going to get into that in a second. But it wasn't just RJ Lewis going 3 for 17. Everyone outside of Zubi. Zubi was a man child. Zubi was Zubi with a double-double. I think he had 22 and 13. If not for Zubi, they would have lost this game by 25. All right. RJ Lewis was not the only one who shit the bed. Aaron Scott, 1 for 10, his final game in a St. John's uniform. Sim Wilcher, 1 for 5. Kadari Richmond, we'll get to him, 2 for 7, plagued by foul trouble, only played 16 minutes. Leftarius Liotopoulos, 1 for 8. I'll say it again. 1 for 10, 1 for 5, 1 for 8, 2 for 7. So RJ Lewis wasn't alone. 28%. You're not going to win any games when you shoot like that. They were 2 for 22 from three. We heard recently, you know, Rick Pitino saying, hey, you know, we're becoming a better shooting team. We're shooting in volumes. You know, don't look at the numbers. Don't believe the hype. We are a better shooting team than the numbers show. I'm sorry, the ugly warts came out. You are what your statistics say you are, a poor three-point shooting team. That game that they shot very well, lights out against UConn, though those were few and far between. All right. They had a 2-for-19 performance against Georgia earlier this year in the Bahamas. They lost that game. They had a 1-for-21 performance against Butler, but they won that game. Probably because it was Butler and not Arkansas. Let's be real. All right, they grinded out that one. This was 2-for-22, and when you're in the NCAA tournament and you're playing a team like Arkansas, who's as talented as they are, this was nearly impossible to overcome. And they were in it. Yes, they were in it until the end. But an absolute, horrendous official show. I can't stand it when the officials start calling it tight. And once they go down that road, they call everything ticky-tack fouls. Were they fouls? Were they not? I'm not going to get into that. But when the refs are blowing their whistle and they blow 44, which is a high amount, not an absurd amount, but it's a very high amount. You are taking the air out of the ball. You're taking any flow of the game out. And it becomes a free throw shooting contest with players like this, with teams at this caliber. That's unfortunate. All right. And then players are fouling out. And then the other team's best players are fouling out. Kadari Richmond played 16 minutes. That's it. He fouled out with over 6 minutes to play. At that point, Arkansas cut off the head of the snake. I know RJ Lewis is the best player. I know Zubi Ejiofor is right there too, but Kadari Richmond runs the show. Now you've taken out their most important player, arguably. And then now we get into the poor performance by RJ Lewis. He was selfish. He was forcing things. He was reverting back to, his first year where he was very selfish and the ball stuck to his hands and he forced shots. And that's what can happen with young players. I say young, he's not a 30-year, 30-year-old man in the NBA who's been around. So it happens. And everyone wants to bring up John Starks, and rightfully so, John Starks, eerily similar, right? John Starks in 1994. NBA Finals, Game 7, Houston Rockets has the worst game of his career shot. I think he was 2-for-18, infamously. And Pat Riley later would say, I rode him, but I should have taken him out. I'm going to take that to the grave with me. It's one of my biggest regrets that I stuck with John Starks. So people were saying all over Twitter and writing it, hey, he did the right thing. You bench your star. You bench him. He's not shooting well. He's selfish. Bench him. You know what? I disagree in this case. These are not NBA paid professionals where you have someone else coming off the bench, where you have other options. This is your guy. This is your first team All Big East player. You don't bench him for the final 5 minutes of a do or die game. I'm sorry. You have to find ways to motivate him. You have to find ways to get him out of his funk and give him that confidence that he needs. And hey, listen, you got to pass more. You got to set up your teammates more. Whatever it is, or keep shooting. The next one's gonna fall. Whatever it is, you ride that guy. This is the Big East Player of the Year. This is a guy who's possibly gonna play in the NBA. I'm not a Hall of Fame coach. Nowhere near it, okay? In my mind, I might think I am, but I am not a Hall of Fame coach. I have never been paid to coach, although I think some of the teams I coach should have paid me. But I said it at the time. A lot of people did. I'm going with my guy. I'm riding my guy until the end. And somehow I'm hoping that he makes a play like he has so many times this year. Instead, Rick Pitino benched him. And worse yet, he was already without his other guy, Kadari Richmond. So now you've significantly reduced your chances of winning. Significantly reduced your chance of winning because you have taken, one guy got taken out by the officials, and you have decided to bench your other best player. For the last 5 minutes of this game, they were without two of their top three players. That's a nearly impossible deficiency to overcome. And then you're putting the ball in the hands of guys who aren't used to being in that position, like Liotopoulos, like Sim Wiltshire, as talented as they are. They're not supposed to be the guys. Kadari Richmond and RJ Lewis are supposed to be the guys. And you have taken them out. So just like Pat Riley has to live with his decision for sticking with John Starks, Rick Pitino will have to live with his position and his decision, excuse me, to bench his best player. Why? Because of poor decisions and poor play. And then on top of it, to go after a longtime reporter of Newsday, Roger Rubin, who's covered St. John's for decades. The million-dollar question after this game, the first question on every damn good reporter's mind is, what happened to RJ Lewis? Why wasn't he in the game the last 5 minutes? That's not the second or third question. That's the first question. And good for Roger. I've never met him, but I respect him a lot. Good for Roger for asking that question. And then Zach Brazilla for following up. They did not deserve the answer that Rick Pitino gave, because Pitino knew that he was going to be second guessed. Pitino's been around this way too long and has dealt with all the media all over the world on every single level. He knew that question was coming, and instead he's like, you know the answer to that question. You know damn well the answer to that question. And I'm not going to, throw my player under the bus, basically. That's bullshit. All right. Tell him what happened. RJ was not having a great game. I didn't like his decisions, and I thought it was best for the team that other players gave us the best chance of winning. He won't say that either, but he should not have insulted the reporter there. So that's my feelings on that. Listen, when you're winning, right? And when everything's going your way, it's all smiles, and you're the toast of the town, and you're the talk of the country, and you're the coach of the year, and everything's great. But then when something like this happens, you need to be better. You are a Hall of Fame coach. And I get it, he's human, and people may disagree with me, but that's the way I feel about it. You know what? When you lose, and you're disappointed, and you're hurt, and it stings, it's your job to still go out there and answer the questions, because the media is doing their job, and you have to face the music and face the hard questions. And he didn't handle it well whatsoever. So now, where does St. John's go from here? Well, first of all, RJ Lewis, everyone's going to want to know, is he coming back? Is he not? There's no question he's going to test the NBA process. There's no question he's going to put his name in the draft. There's no question St. John's will throw a lot of money at him to return. So he's going to have to weigh his options. He's going to have to hear what the NBA scouts have to say. He's going to have to hear what the directors and personnel have to say about his position. Right now, he's a second round pick. Right now, he might be a mid second round pick. Is that enough for him to go? Seton Hall fans will recall Isaiah Whitehead. A second round pick was good enough for him to go. UConn fans will recall last year, Alex Caravan was a projected second round pick. That was not good enough for him to go. And he returned to UConn to better his stock and improve his play and help UConn go for a three-peat. We'll get to Caravan in a second. Which route will Lewis go? Will he go to the NBA and say, I'm ready, and wherever I go? Or will he come back and try to ride it out again? Will he try to get another St. John's Big East championship and take the Johnnies even further and cement himself as one of the greatest St. John's players ever? along with guys like Mark Jackson and guys like Chris Mullin, Walter Berry. Is he going to try that? Because imagine RJ Lewis returning with Zubi Adjafor and Leftarius Liotopoulos and Ruben Pray and Sim Wiltshire and Sadiku Ibeanayo. Imagine him returning with these players and running it back again and adding the pieces that St. John's needs to add. Because you know, Rick Pitino is going to go after a point guard, a major point guard, and shooters. Number one on his list. All right. Point guard and shooters. You have to have the point guard, and they have to get shooters because Rick Pitino, who basically invented how to, benefit from the 3-point line, had one of his worst 3-point shooting teams that he's ever had. And that will not happen again. You know he's getting shooters. You know he's getting a point guard. All right. We say goodbye to Aaron Scott. We say goodbye to Davon Smith. We say goodbye to Kadari Richmond. Will we say goodbye to Sim Wiltshire? That's an interesting one. Will we say goodbye to Jaden Glover, who we barely got a chance to know? Or will he trust in Rick Pitino's player development and stay for his sophomore year? I wonder about Sim Wiltshire. I feel like he always felt he was, the third wheel. So I don't have any inside information, but I wonder if he's going to stay or go. Wouldn't shock me. We saw this morning, Tuesday morning, that news broke that Brady Dunlap is putting his name in the portal. So there goes St. John's best shooter, best 3-point shooter. So he's entered the portal. So we could see more players follow. And how does that shake up how Rick Pitino forms this roster? This is where we're at. RJ Lewis is the key piece. Zubi says he wants to come back. I'm sure he will. Who else is coming back and who's not coming back? That determines where St. John's goes from here. Where does UConn go from here? That is an interesting question too, because Dan Hurley, I'll tell you right now, he has a fire that will keep burning as long as he's on the sidelines. And there is no way he is going to make the mistakes he made last year in forming his roster. But first of all, let's talk about the good, the greatness of this 13 consecutive NCAA tournament wins. It doesn't happen often. So love him or hate him, you have to respect what UConn has done. And I certainly appreciate what UConn has done, because 13 straight wins in the NCAA tournament has only happened two other times. That's it. They tied the 91, 92, 93 Duke teams that won 13 straight games. And of course, the record, the all-time record, which is absurd. All right. You talk about unbreakable records. UCLA's dynasties from 1964 to 1974, a span of 9 years, 10 years. All right. They won 38 straight NCAA tournament games. An absurd number that will never be broken. It is so hard to go back to back, right? Only three teams have done it in the past 35 years: Duke, Florida, and UConn. 13 straight games. And I've said this before, and I want to reiterate it. It's more impressive what UConn has done, not because they just did it, but in an NIL era of roster shakeups and roster turnovers, you have to do it all over again with new guys, 50% of your roster. I'm not taking anything away from Duke, but those Duke teams had roster continuity and all-time great college basketball players in Duke Hall of Fame. Okay, in the Duke Hall of Fame, Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill, Thomas Hill, Christian Laettner, They were all on those back-to-back teams. Leitner was not on the 93 team, but they still had Hurley. They still had the Hills. All right. Bobby Hurley was a sophomore, then a junior, and then a senior when they finally lost. I mean, truly one of the great college basketball teams in my lifetime, those teams. Just as these UConn teams, these UConn teams are what they've done are the great teams in UConn history and modern college basketball history. I mean, the first time they did it, they had guys like Adama Sanogo and Jordan Hawkins and Andre Jackson and Nyheim Aline and Joey Calcaterra, who was a great role player. And Nyheim Aline, a great role player. They lost those five guys. They lost three starters. Three starters. And yes, they did bring back Tristan Newton, the first team All-American, and Alex Caravan and Donovan Clingan. Clingan, don't forget, Clingan backed up Adama Sanogo. All right. They had roster turnover. They had to find new pieces like a freshman sensation in Stephon Castle and Cam Spencer, who's now playing in the NBA as well. All right. And was a huge, huge piece of that puzzle. So what UConn has done has been so impressive. It's going to be hard to do it again. Someone will do it, but it's going to be awfully hard to win two straight NCAA championships and win 12 games in a row. We'll see. I want to see it happen. But for right now, UConn's is more impressive. But what happened is they ran into a Florida team that was more talented, that was supposed to beat them, and UConn gave them every ounce of energy, everything they could get. Florida was trailing with the under four timeout, okay? And if not for the heroics of a first team All-American named Walter Clayton, who started his career at Iona and then went to Florida, you talk about one of the all-star careers. You talk about player development. This scrawny little kid from Florida who didn't have one major D1 offer. Rick Pitino got him from Florida. I think Jacksonville was one of his other offers. Rick Pitino got him to Iona, honed him into a first team all MAC selection. I believe he was the player of the year. And then he goes to Florida and becomes a first team All-American. That is player development. He hit big shot after big shot, hit two huge threes. And even the announcers were like, listen, you got to keep the ball out of his hands. Easier said than done. He was an assassin. That's what it took to beat this UConn team. Every ounce of energy and every ounce of talent from Walter Clayton Jr. Dan Hurley was the better coach in this game. He squeezed every ounce out of this team that he possibly could. I'm sure he's mentally drained, but afterward, he was crying. He said, I could never love a team more than this team. And I get it. I get it. Because even if you don't win the national championship, even if you don't win a championship and you fall short of expectations, but you know deep in your heart that, man, we got everything we could out of this team. Isn't that a win? Isn't that a victory right there? So, UConn fans, of course, are wondering, why didn't we play defense like this all season? Why didn't we play defense like this all season? Because, we might have had a better seed. We might have finished second. We might have even challenged St. John's for a title this year in the Big East. And things might have been different. But you know what? They were a roller coaster and they weren't tough enough and they weren't strong enough defensively, physically, or mentally all season. But when the bright lights turned on and the NCAA tournament rolled around, Hurley found that switch. He did. I questioned whether he could find it. I questioned it. They found it. They just ran into a better team, a team that was more talented, deeper, and found a way to win and found a way. His name's Walter Clayton Jr., to make shots when they mattered most. They made a couple of more plays than UConn did. So where does UConn go from here? A lot like St. John's, they need the point guard. We say goodbye to Hassan Diarra, former Big East Sixth Man of the Year. Will go down as a beloved Husky. There's no doubt about it. We say goodbye to Sampson Johnson, and likely Liam McNeely, because I can't see him not going to the NBA. He's a projected top 10, certainly a lottery pick. So he's gone. They need a point guard, just like St. John's. And Dan Hurley and Rick Pitino will probably, likely be fighting for the same point guard. And may the deeper pockets win, okay? Because both are going to go after experienced, high-level combo point guards. They both know it. They both need it. Where will it come from? We're going to find out. So that is first and foremost. What happens with Alex Caravan? My prediction is that he will test the NBA draft waters again. But I've said this before, I don't think Alex Caravan is an NBA player. I think at best, he's a two-way player. I think in a lot of ways, the NBA scouts look at him as a very good college basketball player. He is a winner. He is a very good college basketball player. I don't know. He's going to get a shot, but I don't know if he will be able to be an NBA player. I don't see the athleticism. I don't see the consistency enough in his three-point shot. He can hit threes. He had some weeks. He went weeks in games where he couldn't find a shot. He's a winner. He's a great college basketball player. There's no doubt about it. I just don't think he's an NBA player. So what would that mean? I don't think he leaves this program. I think my prediction, he tests the NBA waters and he returns. That is my prediction. I think Alex Caravan will come back and play for UConn next year. Terrace Reed, that is a question. I wonder, I'd love to see him back. I'm sure Dan Hurley would love to see him back another year of him in the program. He's one of my favorite players on his team. But in this day and age, you don't know what's in people's minds. If he wants to get all the money he can, he's not an NBA player. He's an undersized 4 and 5. He might be somebody who leaves for greener pastures. That's a guess. I would think Solo Ball returns. What about Jalen Stewart? What about Jaden Ross? UConn was very fortunate. Everybody came back last year. The year before, not so much. There were players that left. Naheem Aline was one of them, and he went to St. John's. I mean, there are guys who they just have different values or they have different goals, and they might want to achieve those goals elsewhere. So we're going to see. We're going to see how much of UConn's roster, maybe 50% of it, is gone. So that's going to be interesting. And one other thing to keep an eye out on is their coaching staff. It's a winning program. When you win back-to-back national championships and you praise your coaches and people know you have bright, young, smart, hardworking, talented coaches like Luke Murray and Kamani Young, will their opportunities to become a head coach come around? So it's going to be a fascinating offseason for UConn as well as they try to pick up the pieces and try to win another national championship. So UConn and St. John's, they're in the same boat looking for the same types of players, just like everybody else. And on the first day of the portal, a record 900 players entered the portal. It is out of control. I think 2 years ago, the number was under 200. Last year, on the first day of the portal, the number was under 300. Now it's triple that. It's over 900 players on the first day. Good luck with that. Last thing I want to talk about is Iona. They welcome their new head coach, Dan Gerio. Zero head coaching experience at the collegiate level. All right, let me just say this. I am a skeptic about this hire. I said it last week on my podcast, and I'm saying it again this week. I don't think they had to change what they had. They had a winning coach, a wonderful coach, a smart coach in Tobin Anderson. They could have figured out the NIL, but instead, the money people at Iona, decided this is the way we want to run things. They weren't on the same page as Tobin. So now they're bringing in a guy who apparently is on their page. Dan Jerryo. Zero head coaching experience at the collegiate level. He was a coach, an assistant coach at Princeton for Mitch Henderson in Henderson's early days, 2011 to 2013. Then he went to Campbell, the Fighting Camels. And for the last 10 years, he has been an NBA assistant. So, how often do these NBA guys come to college and have success? How often do these NBA guys, these career NBA guys, these guys who have coached for years and years in the NBA, the college game's a little different. And I know he was an assistant, but he doesn't know what it's like to run a program and certainly doesn't know what it's like to manage it in an NIL era. So excuse me for having my doubts about Dan Jerryo. Do I want him to win? Sure. But I'm telling you, my prediction is it will not end well for Dan Jerryo at Iona. That's my prediction. I'm going on record. Now, if I'm an NBA player, my goodness. I mean, did you see on Twitter? All the NBA guys were out in full force. What a great hire. Iona has a winner. Dan Jerryo, my guy. LeBron James, Donovan Mitchell. I mean, how many guys? Richard Jefferson, Kevin Love, Larry Nance, Tristan Thompson. They were all out on Twitter talking about this glowing hire. I've never seen so much praise for a coaching hire. LeBron James, hell yeah, Big Dan. Congratulations, brother. All types of emojis, fire, bombs. Donovan Mitchell. Yes, sir. Iona got a good one. Kevin Love. You love to see it. Exclamations, emojis everywhere. Bright future for Dan. Iona got a good one. Larry Nance. What a hire. Dan played a huge role in my career and growth. Okay, I like that one. Richard Jefferson. Congrats, Big Dan. Tristan Thompson. Congrats, brother. Let go. Channing Frye, send me Iona gear ASAP. Y'all got a HOF exclamation 6 times. If Dan Jerryo is a Hall of Fame coach, then I will eat my sneakers. This is the beginning of a Hall of Fame career. You just heard it. I'm sorry if I have the sarcasm dripping from my mouth. I have my doubts. Dan Jerryo, prove me wrong. I want Iona to win. I have nothing against you. But the way this all went down and looking at your resume, I'm sorry if I have my doubts. I'm not alone. That's the way I feel. I don't think this is going to end as well as all of these NBA players think it's going to, including Channing Frye, who thinks Dan Jerryo is a Hall of Famer. So we shall see. Okay. Finally, Tobin Anderson. We have not forgotten about our guy, Tobin. He got ambushed. He had to figure out where he's going, and I'm sure it still stings, but it's no surprise that he is right back up interviewing for positions. And I said it wouldn't take long. Somebody is going to hire Tobin Anderson, and someone is going to, Tobin is going to make that AD look very smart. I said it before, I'm saying it again. And according to some of the reports on Twitter, he is going to get an interview chance at Drake and Navy. And the Drake one is very, very interesting. This is a program that their head coach, Darren DeVries, he just left and went to Indiana. He took Drake to 3 straight NCAA tournaments and won them the game this year when they upset Missouri. So DeVries is on to Indiana, and Drake is here looking for a head coach. And how great would it be that the hometown hero of Tobin Anderson returns to Iowa. Tobin grew up in Iowa, played high school there, was an all-state player, played high school ball at Truro, a town called Truro in Iowa. It's about 40 miles south of Des Moines, which is where Drake is located. So, how great would this be? A chance to go home and coach in his home state of Iowa. If I'm a betting man, listen, I'm sure Tobin wants it. I'm sure he's interested in it. What a great move that would be for both Tobin and Drake. The other job is reportedly Navy, and that's interesting as well. All right. Obviously, it's a different type of recruiting. It's a different level of basketball, but still, coaches coach. And that's what Tobin Anderson wants to do. Clearly, he wants to coach. Clearly, he can coach. Where he ends up coaching, it's not if, but when he gets that next job. And I really hope it's Drake. That would be awesome. All right. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, everyone. A lot to talk about. Season's ending. Where do they go from here? The portal is open. We're 900 on the first day. My goodness. You know, it we're going to be over 1,000 before I even post this podcast. And then what's next? 2,000? It's coming. What's also coming is spring is here. Summer's right around the corner. We're still going to have podcasts as long as there's news to talk about. Portal additions, subtractions, coaching hires, whatever it is, we'll talk about it here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And thank you for sharing. And of course, thanks to my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. Until next time, enjoy the Sweet 16. Enjoy the Elite Eight, the Final Four. I'll be back again really soon. My name is Brian DeNovellis. So long.